BBC Radio 3 with studio production this morning by Mark Swatzentruber.
Performance on 3 at the Edinburgh Festival. Radio 3 continues its series of highlights from Edinburgh 2010 with three of the world's great orchestras. The Cleveland with music director Franz Welser-Most. The Royal Concertgebouw and chief conductor Maris Janssens. And Sakari Oromo with the Finnish Radio Symphony Orchestra. Performance on 3 at the Edinburgh Festival, weeknights Monday to Thursday at 7 o'clock.
And now here on BBC Radio 3, Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
The writer Jackie Kay has written a series of acclaimed novels, like Trumpet, and poetry volumes, like The Adoption Papers, that deal with identity and place. Red Dust Road is the most recent, and once again, that theme of searching for who one is comes to the fore. But this, one's tempted to say, almost reaches a conclusion, except as you point out yourself, Jackie, a conclusion is only another question mark. The end is only another beginning.
Yes, I think there is no end. Adoption, when you're adopted, it's a kind of a never-ending story. And that's one of the things that's fascinating for you if you're a writer, because it's a kind of a gift. You always have the reality version of your real parents. In my case, my adoptive parents are my real parents, and the imaginary version of your birth parents. And you have an imaginary version of your birth parents that often turns out to be not at all true. So when you do, if you do trace them and get to meet them, it can be quite pathetic, because they can be completely the opposite to your own imaginings.
When you met your father in this volume, this is the great thing about your book, is they're very funny too. So, I mean, it's touching and sad, but also very funny. But of course, that's true of life, isn't it? The sort of black comedy and everything.
Absolutely. I mean, I love the way that sadness and humour live inside the same house. I mean, tragedy and comedy, they have the same rooms to the same houses. And I love the way that you can't simply say that this is sad or this is happy, that the two things, I like the border country really that exists between the two states of mind. And actually, I think that they're very, very close, which is why people often laugh, surprisingly, at funerals, or that we develop a kind of a morbid humour around subjects which are deemed to be inappropriate.
Reading what you've written, it's very clear to me that music has been very important to you.
It has. I can't imagine my life without the music that I've heard. I think if I hadn't heard the music that I had heard, I would have lived a different life. It feels that important to me. It's your companion and it's your friend and it comes alongside you, and it's music is, you can turn to it in all sorts of times of difficulty, and you can turn to it at moments in your life when you are having difficulty with things or where you can't express yourself. And I often find music very, very inspiring. You know, I've written a lot of different stories that have been directly influenced by specific pieces of music, like, say, by Janáček, the Kreutzer Sonata. I wrote a story called Sonata, and I wrote a series of poems that have been put to music. And I grew up listening to jazz and blues, and I really like those jazz blues rhythms and that way of telling a story, so I've been quite influenced by that. And I also like the folk tradition and the Celtic tradition and those ways of telling a story. So I think those rhythms and patterns and repetitions and beats definitely find their way into my poetry.
Well, it's not the Kreutzer Sonata that we're going to hear, but it is music by Janáček to start with.
Absolutely. I think Janáček is stunning as a composer. I think he's really, really original. And the thing that really attracts me to him is the way that you have a kind of a fusion. I'm really interested in composers that take different traditions. So I like the way that he borrows from the Moravian folk tradition and has the classical strains. I like the way that he combines these two things, and I find him quite startling.
Very earthy, isn't he?
And very earthy and different. And also, when I listen to this particular piece of music, I can imagine the dance, and I can imagine a room, and so it immediately puts pictures in my head, and I love listening to music that puts physical pictures into my head.
Blessed, from the Lakian Dances by Janáček. The Slovak Radio Symphony Orchestra was conducted by Ondrej Lenár. We're going to hear sacred music next, Jackie, but I don't think it really is the sacred nature of it that's important to you.
No, it's not the sacred nature of it that's important to me, but I do think this is one of my all-time favourite pieces of music. I find it really, really affecting, and every time I listen to it, and I have listened to it throughout my life, you know, somebody gave it to me when I was in my 20s, so I've listened to it over and over and over and over again, and I think it's just unaffectedly, emotionally beautiful, and There is something holy about it, and perhaps for an agnostic, it's funny to say that one's drawn to sacred and holy music. But yes, I think for me it's holy.
But an agnostic or an atheist can feel moved by going into a great cathedral, don't you think?
And, absolutely.
You don't have to believe to find something transporting. And maybe if you're a writer or you love music, that is your religion to a certain extent.
I think that when you've got a sensitive heart, that music that has almost an unbearable poignancy to it comes right through. I mean, Pergolesi wrote this when he was 26 on his deathbed, and there's something about the music when you listen to it, it is almost close to death, but close to death in a comforting way, where death isn't this awful thing, that death has something almost beautiful about it.
I love the Latin here, tristis being sadness and afflicta, affliction. O quam tristis et afflicta. The purity of Emma Kirkby's voice there, combined with James Bowman's beautiful countenance, was very touching in itself, wasn't it? And the absolute pinpoint accuracy of the notes.
And I love the way that the interplay between those two voices, and purity is the word that I would use, you're absolutely right. There's something that's completely clear and pure and unaffected, and yet it goes straight to your heart, almost because it's uncluttered. There's nothing in the way of it.
It's like a flying buttress to a great cathedral.
Yeah.
O quam tristis et afflicta, from Pergolesi's Stabat Mater. We heard, as I said, Emma Kirkby and James Bowman, and the Academy of Ancient Music, directed by Christopher Hogwood. I mentioned earlier that you often refer to music in your writing, Jackie, and it'd be lovely to hear one of your poems. And let's choose one that actually has got a reference to a composer. This is, I think, 21st birthday poem?
Yes, this is 21st birthday poem for Matthew. Matthew, I remember how, before you were born, I felt you dancing in my waters, turning and twisting and flipping, and how just after the Sunday afternoon, when you came into my world, you danced to Handel's Water Music, that same tune you'd heard since conception, a fluid, watery dance. And now, 21 years on, you're still dancing underwater, my son, with stingrays and yellow fins, barracudas and marlins, finding in the deep mystery of the sea something of that tranquility I imagine you loved as a tiny baby. Now you swim between shoals of tuna, closer than the imagination, those vivid colours, and the water parting its magic hands as you, my proud adventurer son, take the whole wide world in your fine hands.
It's rather appropriate that we should go to a solo instrument now, dancing in its own waters, really. Why did you choose the Bach unaccompanied cello?
I love the cello. It's one of my favourite instruments. It's almost human. And I like the idea of when you watch cellists play and the way that they hold their instrument, they're so physical with them. I know some cellists, and they'll come out with things like, you know, we're having a bad day today, or we've fallen out. And I know one cellist that doesn't play the cello anymore, but it lives in the spare room of the house, and she compares it to living in a house with an ex-lover. And I think it's amazing that the instrument should evoke such strong physical reactions from the players. You know, if you watch somebody, you can see them taking their breath, and you can see the music coming up and through them and out, and sometimes people look joined to the cello. So I love that, and I love Bach because these pieces to me exist in a world of their own. They're completely magical and astonishing, and the more that you get into them, the more that you find in them.
Thank you.
Well, talk about a physical relationship with the instrument, that in the hands of Pablo Casals there, the cello sings vibrantly.
Yes, it's wonderful. It's the raw power of it. It's just absolutely fantastic. And you get completely, you know, that the cliche lost in music happens to me when I'm listening to these Bach suites. Also, there's something that goes on in your head that's quite filmic, because the music has been used in films. You actually, it has a conversation with other mediums beyond and outside of its time.
The prelude from the cello suite number 6 in D major, BWV 1012, by Johann Sebastian Bach, played by Casals. Now, we talked about the element of improvisation in Bach, and also the combination of systems, and in that way he's quite jazz-like. It's not surprising to me that somebody like Jacques Lussier should take Bach and jazz it up. And to a certain extent, that's true also of Nina Simone, who had a classical training, but is also a wonderful singer of jazz.
That's one of the things that I love about Nina Simone, is how much she loved Bach and how you can hear Bach counterpoints in her music and in the way that she plays the piano. And she was classically trained and went for scholarships, but didn't actually get in to the institution of her choice because she was black, and that damaged her mentally. But it meant that she still kept on and kept on fusing two different worlds together. And if it hadn't been for that, we wouldn't have had Nina Simone. And Nina Simone has been an extraordinary influence on other musicians. But I love how she combines classical music and jazz. I just love
and
what
she
song, does
with it. Just tell us a little bit about the narrative of this song.
Well, this particular song she wrote herself for women, I love, because she describes four different kind of women through colour and through race and what their experience of life is because of that. But she also goes further than that. So she's really, really good at being able to take you into a narrative situation and make you see a character, which is why I think, you know, Simone is a writer's musician. And even when she takes on other people's songs, like Mr. Bojangles, she makes you see him in a way that, you know, I think her version of Mr. Bojangles is almost the best one.
Black. My arms are long. My hair is woolly. My back is strong. Strong enough to take the pain inflicted again and again. What do they call me? My name is Aunt Sarah. My name is Aunt Sarah. Aunt Sarah. Skin is yellow, my hair is long, between two worlds I do belong. My father was rich and white, he forced my mother late. What do they call me? My name is Sophronia. My name is Sophronia. My mouth like wine.
whose little girl am I? Anyone who has money to buy, what do they call me? My name is Sweet Thing. My name is Sweet Thing.
She always manages to turn the knife with a kind of almost devastating thrust, doesn't she?
She really does. She was like that to see live as well. I remember seeing her live in Ronnie Scott's, and you could never tell if you went to see her live what kind of mood she was going to be in. And she had this incredible command of the, because she's a great performer, a great pianist, and a great singer. So she combines almost separately and together these three strong qualities. But she came here, she was led onto the stage by somebody, and she was wearing a long kind of white, almost fur coat. And the minute that she sat down at the piano, it was like she was sitting on her throne. And I remember in the second half, I shouted out a request for her to sing Sugar in My Bowl. And she looked directly at me and she said, Sugar in my bowl, I'll be doing later. And I was like, oh my God, she talked to me. It was fantastic.
And did she do Strange Fruit as well?
Yeah, she did Strange Fruit.
That's pretty devastating.
Oh, it's amazing. Her yes, it's just totally devastating.
Four Women from Nina Simone. It's a devastating series of songs that we go to now, Jackie Kay. And there was a time when we had them on a lot on the programme, and then we sort of slightly pushed people away from them. And as a result, we can have them back again, which is the four last songs of Richard Strauss. Because these are, again, about loss, but in this case, it's about loss of life, isn't it? And coming to a conclusion.
But I think there's something accepting about the loss of life and the coming to a conclusion in these songs. So it doesn't frighten you. If I wanted to listen to something as I was dying, I might choose these, because there's something so beautiful about them. And Strauss wrote them at the very end of his life and didn't get to hear them being performed. But there's something almost otherworldly, like they're passing into a different world.
And once again, a performer who imbues them with some extra kind of vision, I think.
I think Jessie Norman's just fantastic, because her voice to me is thrilling and at the same time, you know, energising and at the same time elegiac, and so she's the whole range.
She finds the blues in these songs.
She does. I mean, she does. And I love singers who find different ranges for songs that you already know. I mean, I've listened to these various different people do different versions of these songs, but Jessie Norman's to me are among them. Some of the best.
Thank you.
September, from Strauss's Four Last Songs, we heard Jesse Norman with the Gewandhaus Orchestra, conducted by Kurt Mazur. As with a lot of your life, Jackie, an element of fusion has come into all of these pieces, your influences from different and contrasting places and cultures. And there's none better that than Ali Fakhrouri.
Absolutely. I'm really excited by musicians and composers that straddle across different worlds, as in that Nina Simone song, Between Two Worlds, I Do Belong. And Ali Fakhrouri I particularly love because he's Malian, and yet he fuses these African rhythms and beats with blues traditions and rhythms, and reggae rhythms even. And so his music fuses all different kinds of music together to make this really, really wonderful sound. Haig and I particularly picked because this is the song that I've just been playing over and over and over again for years. And it's a sacred mountain. He was on his way to visit this mountain, and he was told by the local people that in order to get the most out of the mountain, not necessarily to get to your final destination, but just to get the most out of the mountain, you had to sing to it. So he composed Haig and I in this mountain between Gao and Manica. And he sang to it and then reached his destination. But there's something of a journey, I think, that you can hear in this song, Haig and I, and also something that's quite sacred.
Ali Fakhrouri and Haig and I. I love that idea, which is also central to Aboriginal culture, of having a respect and singing to a place, and it sings to you, like Ayers Rock, Uluru, as they call it. Yeah. There's something very poetic about that concept of landscape. And
absolutely. I love the idea that you can respond to a landscape creatively with your own past and your own imagination, and that you bring to the landscape whatever it is that is in you, and that some landscapes you recognise you have an affinity for and other landscapes you don't. And in the case of Aboriginals, I love the idea that songs, that they actually believe in song lines, that songs exist under the very soil and that you can trace them. there's something wonderful about the idea that of songs being buried, because in a sense, songs are buried in us, and we pass songs on. We're in a musical culture where we can literally pass a song on to another person, or pass an enthusiasm, pass a passion on. A lot of my musical choices today have been pieces of music that were originally given to me by friends. Roland Hayes, I discovered through my good friend Ali Smith, who bought me him not that long ago, and he's a new passion.
Well, this is not a version of Nacht und Träume that people may know.
And people may not know of Roland Hayes. I mean, he was the first African-American singer. He was out and about long before Paul Robeson. In fact, he paved the way for people like Paul Robeson. And he was an amazing man and had the most extraordinary life. You know, in 1915, no one would agree to put him on because of his colour. So he actually got the money together himself and put himself on. He didn't get a manager till quite late in his life, and used to organise all of his own tours. He would let nothing stop him. And he believed that in order to be able to sing to all men, he'd have to learn the language of all men. So he sang different traditions. He sang spirituals, he sang blues, and he also sang in German, in French, in Italian. And just the most remarkable man. And at the same time, you know, his wife and his daughter are getting thrown to the black bit of the shoe store, and he was beaten up when he went to complain. So he's just a really remarkable and inspiring man, and it's amazing that we don't actually know of him. You were saying, Michael, that you hadn't heard this version before. What did you think?
I thought it was the most touching vulnerability to the voice, and not in a way that meant that the voice was lacking, but there was just a sort of humanity to it, which I found very touching. It's such a wonderful song too.
It's a beautiful song. Night and Dreams is just a beautiful song. It's almost otherworldly, isn't it? Mm. Ethereal in the way that it pulls you in, and it's so sensitive.
Nacht und Träume by Schubert. We heard Roland Hayes accompanied by Reginald Boardman. Another singer, in fact, who you'd like to hold up a candle for, Jackie Kay, next.
Definitely. I think that Jean Redpath is fabulous, absolutely fabulous singer. And she's got, I think I'm attracted to people that have profundity and complexity, but great clarity. And she's got a very clear, pure Highland voice. She's from Fife, which is the part of Scotland that my mum's from, Lochgilly. But I think she's done a great work in collecting all Burns songs, and I had great difficulty again with Jean Redpath in thinking which song I would pick, and in the end I picked this Leaving the Land, because so many Scottish people migrated out of Scotland to Canada and to New Zealand and to Australia. In fact, there's more Scottish people outside of Scotland than there are in the country, seriously in need of some of those people coming back. And I think there's something very moving about when people move from one country to another and then still try and retain and keep the essential side of themselves that is Scottishness.
It's time to go now, Jenny. No need to close the door. What if the dust gets in the house? It doesn't matter anymore. You and the dust have been at war for far too many. Leaving all I've ever
Again, there was a vulnerability there, wasn't there?
I think so. A lovely kind of vulnerability where you're drawn into it, you're not pushed away from it. I think she's got such a pure and beautiful voice, Jean Redpath, and she's another one of these singers. I can't understand why she's not internationally known. She left Scotland herself when she was 25 and went to Canada and has travelled about. And then she made a great mission of recording all of these Burns songs, and that's just been fantastic. So I love the way that she kind of takes you back into the past and also makes you think of Exodus and the great exodus of Scottish people leaving Scotland.
Leaving the land, Jean Redpath. Now, Jackie, you've written, I can imagine you'd be very good at this. In fact, I know you are. And that's writing for children, which you've done a lot of very successfully, I think. Is that something you really enjoy doing?
I love writing for children. I don't know if I've been all that successful in it, but I do love writing for children. And I love children's imaginations. I love the way that they see things that we don't. I remember being in Ireland once and this 10-year-old girl said to me, "What do poems mean? Do they mean anger? Do they mean pity? Do they mean hate? Do they mean revenge? Do they mean sadness? What do they mean?" All of these things. It was just fantastic. And one time I went into school and the teacher said to the children, "You can ask, we've got a living poet in our classroom. You can ask her anything you like." And this little boy put up his hand and said, "How much do you weigh?" And I love that about children. There's something so refreshing about it that
their innocence means that they can say absolutely the first thing that comes into their mind. And I suppose, in a way, for a writer, that sort of unfettered, uncluttered directness of observation is quite interesting, really.
It is. It's really interesting. And at the same time, they can appreciate much more profound things than we ever give them credit for, because they also live in worlds where they have to deal with death and divorce and so on. So I think, I like to write for children in a way that kind of captures their own complexity and doesn't talk down to them.
This final piece, Jackie Kay, is, I think, probably in tribute not to children, but to your father. You were the child, in fact.
Yes, to my childhood, because my dad sang this as his party piece. And we used to have lots of parties in our house and sing songs. And actually, I was happiest as a child listening to people sing. I think that's where I got my love of music initially. It was just sitting in the house listening to Anna Ashton sing John Anderson, My Joe, or my dad sing Brush Up Your Shakespeare. And he used to kind of do it, perform it as well, and do a little kick. A little high kick in the air when he got to kick her right in the Corleones. And now he's 85 and he still performs this song and he still makes an attempt to do his little up in the air scissor kick, and I kind of worry about him falling and hurting himself. But it's a brilliant song and very, very funny, and he always makes people laugh when
he
sings it.
I hope he'll be listening to this, and I hope he'll do that little kick when the appropriate moment arrives.
Today in society go for classical poetry. So to win their hearts, one must quote with ease Aeschylus and Euripides. One must know Homer and, believe me, Bo, Sophocles, also Sappho. Unless you know Shelley and Keats and Pope, dainty Debbies will call you a dope. But the poet of them all, who will start 'em simply raving, is the poet people call the Bard of Stratford-on-Avon. Brush up your Shakespeare, start quoting him now. Brush up your Shakespeare, and the women you will wow. Just declaim a few lines from Othello, and they'll think you're a hell of a fella. If your blonde won't respond when you flatter her, tell her what Tony told Cleopatra. If she fights when her clothes you are mussing, what a close much ado about nothing. Brush up your Shakespeare, and they'll all kowtow. Brush up your Shakespeare, start quoting him now. Brush up your Shakespeare, and the women you will wow. With the wife of the British ambassador, try a crack out at Troilus and Cressida. If she says she won't buy it or take it, make her take it, what's more as you like it.
If she says your behavior is heinous, kick her right in the Coriolanus. Brush up your Shakespeare and they'll all kowtow. Brush up your Shakespeare, start quoting him now. Brush up your Shakespeare and the women you will wow. If you can't be a Hammond, do Hamlet. They will not give a damn or a damlet.
Just recite an occasional sonnet and your lap will have honey upon it.
When your baby is pleading for pleasure,
let her sample your measure for measure. Brush up your Shakespeare and they'll all kowtow.
Forsuit,
and they'll all kowtow.
E-faith,
and they'll all kowtow. Brush up your Shakespeare, start quoting him now. Brush up your Shakespeare and the women you will wow.
Better mention the Merchant of Venice
when her sweet pound of flesh you would menace.
If her virtue at first she defends well,
just remind her that all's well that ends well.
And if still she won't give you a bonus,
you know what Venus got from Adonis.
Woo!
Brush up your Shakespeare and they'll all kowtow.
Thinkst thou?
And they'll all kowtow.
As bodkins,
and they'll all kowtow. Brush up your Shakespeare, start quoting him now. Brush up your Shakespeare and the women you will wow.
If your girl is a Washington Heights dream,
treat the kid to a Midsummer's Night's Dream. If she then wants an all by herself night,
let her rest every 11th or 12th night. If because of your heat she gets huffy,
simply play on and lay on McDuffie. Brush up your Shakespeare and they'll all kowtow.
Forsooth,
and they'll all kowtow.
Thinkst thou,
and they'll all kowtow. We trow, and they'll all kowtow.
Well, that's a brilliant fusion of words and music, isn't it?
It is. It's so clever and witty and funny. I love Cole Porter's lyrics anyway. I think he's just a genius. I mean, who writes like that anymore? Who finds those clever rhymes and those double entendres?
We heard Lee Wilcoff and Michael Mulholland from the new Broadway cast recording of Cole Porter's Brush Up Your Shakespeare from Kiss Me, Kate. Well, Jackie Kay, it's been a great pleasure to hear the music you've chosen and the reasons why and how it sort of mirrors, to a certain extent, aspects of your own quest and writing in life.
Yes, I think we do. We choose our own music, don't we? We choose our music to accompany us, or the music comes to find us. In some cases, we're given these gifts of music and we discover amazing pieces of music that then become lifelong loves. You know, we might change lovers, we might change houses, but we keep our music, hopefully, unless the ex gets the CDs. And I really do love the idea that music, that once you have a real love for somebody, that you keep that person with them. Nina Simone, I've listened to since I was 19, and I still listen to over and over again. Ali Farkaturi, over and over again. And there's a lot of people that I wasn't able to fit in today.
Well, we'll give you a CD of the programme, so then whatever happens to you, whether it's to do with where you're living or your love life, you can take your private passions with you.
Thank you very much, Michael.
That was Jackie Kay talking to Michael Barclay. Well, next Sunday on Private Passions, there's another chance to hear a programme we first broadcast in 2001 with the novelist Alan Sillitoe, who died earlier this year. Private Passions is a classic arts production for BBC Radio 3, and today's edition was produced by Sarah Cropper. Well, a very good afternoon to you from me, Ian Skelly. Welcome along to Radio 3 if you've recently joined us. Do stay tuned if you can to head off to Edinburgh to the festival there in a couple of minutes to hear a concert of South American early music, a reconstruction of an 18th century fiesta in Bolivia celebrating Our Lady of Guadalupe. The Early Music Show is after a summary of the news this lunchtime, the time now being 1 o'clock. It's read by David Cornett.
The Pope, on the final day of his state visit to Britain, has beatified the 19th century theologian Cardinal John Henry Newman, who left the Church of England to become a Catholic. The honour brings the Cardinal one step away from becoming a saint. More than 50,000 people were present for the occasion at an open-air mass at Coughton Park in Birmingham. In his first beatification since he was elected, Pope Benedict paid tribute to the Cardinal's outstanding holiness and his insights into the vital place of religion in civilised society. The Liberal Democrat leader, Nick Clegg, has said new measures to tackle tax evasion and avoidance will be announced at the party's conference in Liverpool later today. He said the coalition would be as hard on tax cheats as on benefit cheats. Two British soldiers were killed in an explosion yesterday while patrolling in a vehicle near Lashkargah in southern Afghanistan. One was serving with the Queen's Royal Lancers, the other with the Royal Engineers. Their families have been told. Up to 31 people have been killed in two car bomb attacks in Baghdad. One device exploded close to the National Security Ministry. Another went off near a restaurant. In Afghanistan, 8 children have died in an explosion while playing near a polling station. Local security officials have blamed a Taliban bomb, but a spokesman for the Taliban denied that insurgents were involved. 3 officials from the Independent Election Commission, who were kidnapped during voting in the parliamentary elections yesterday, have been found dead in the north of the country. Police in California fear that members of a suspected doomsday cult who've been reported missing are planning a mass suicide. 8 children are among the group from Palmdale near Los Angeles. And the weather, southern areas will stay bright and mainly dry with sunny intervals. Southern Scotland and northeast England will become brighter. Other places will stay cloudy and will have more rain. Tonight, there'll be more rain in the north and light rain will move into western areas. BBC News and weather at 1:02.
David, thank you very much. Well, in an hour from now, Ian Bostridge sings Ich habe genug. You can hear a piano concerto by Dohnányi and a set of variations by Schubert, just some of this week's batch of Radio 3 requests from 2. But first, the Early Music Show with Lucy Skeeping, which begins with a rather hip-swaying Latin American dance.
Thank you. joyful opener to today's early music show with a traditional nativity song from Peru. Little boy, the best one could have. Let us sing and dance. Welcome to the second of our visits this weekend to the 2010 Edinburgh International Festival, where a whole week was devoted to early music from South America in a series they called Treasures and Traditions. And there was certainly a lot of both in today's concert, which was given by the Swiss-based ensemble Elima under their enthusiastic Argentinian director Gabriel Garrido. The idea was to recreate a typical Latin American fiesta, in this case the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe, a joyful, colourful 10 days of celebrations that took place in the city of La Plata, now known as Sucre in Bolivia. And in spite of the rather overcast Scottish weather and the somewhat austere interior of the huge Grey Friars Kirk where the concert took place, the music was so infectious, so lively, they soon had the audience drawn into the party atmosphere. In fact, at times, it was hard not to clap along. The festival is Spanish in origin, introduced by the Christian missionaries at the start of the 17th century, and it began with a candlelit procession through the streets when a portrait of the saint was taken from its chapel and carried into the cathedral, accompanied by lively singing. Angels to the lectern, in joyful choirs we exalt a girl of rare beauty whose humility shattered the arrogance of the devil himself. Come, make haste and honour this day.